As the title shows here, we're going to have more of the same. Either great minds think alike, or I'm just really lazy in coming up with a title for my presentation. But the genesis of what we're going to talk about today really started when I began at Texas Cooperative Extension in 2006. Dr. Wheeler had really picked up the reins and ran in response to some consumer and producer concerns regarding the verticillium wilt occurrence in the High Plains. And when I got there in 2006, following several years of that initial work that she'd done on verticillium, we started looking at opportunities between our programs to complement the disease reaction among some of the commercially available cultivars, as well as some of the varieties that were being released or some of the breeding lines that were being developed. So we're going to give an overview of not so much the verticillium wilt that Terry just talked about, but put into context how these varieties perform with regard to other diseases that are problematic on the High Plains. And the goal is to provide a comprehensive overview for our growers based on collaborations with our agronomists, with our entomologists, and our weed scientists to really get a complete package for what varieties perform under the situations and circumstances on the High Plains. So we'll see the column to your far left, agronomic package. We're not looking necessarily at agronomics. The varieties that are available in the High Plains are adapted to that region. They have a fit in certain places. It's our responsibility, our charge, to find out where those varieties with those attributes best fit from a producer standpoint. So we're going to provide information specifically with regard to bacterial blight, the root knot nematode, verticillium wilt, fusarium wilt, and other disease issues. Again, to complement what's being done with other specialists at the station and in the region. Verticillium wilt, it's a major factor, a very photogenic disease. Here we're looking at foliar symptoms associated with the disease, interveinal necrosis and chlorosis, premature defoliation. Can take on several manifestations of the symptoms with regard to expression. We can look at vascular discoloration as a diagnostic feature associated with identifying this disease. And not to go into too much detail regarding verticillium wilt, but your management options, as we all know, are only as good as your diagnosis. And I think that's where a lot of the difficulties are in initially managing diseases and understanding what problems we have in regions such as the High Plains is properly understanding the players. And that's a major focus of extension educational efforts, knowing what you're dealing with so that we can fully examine and appreciate what management options are out there. And working again very closely with Dr. Wheeler, we've developed a lot of educational materials with the background being mostly verticillium wilt in response to the need. She's talked about variety selection being the cornerstone of management with regard to verticillium wilt, and we're playing upon that with regard to this talk and management of other diseases in the region as well. Crop rotation, she covered that. Other factors, we're continuing to refine our understanding and management of other cultural factors associated with disease management. Looking at potentially some tillage effects on verticillium wilt into other diseases, as well as maybe nitrogen, which is some studies that were presented yesterday in the agronomy physiology section with Caleb Albers, a graduate student at Texas Tech. Again, trying to get a comprehensive overview with verticillium as a backdrop. What can we do from an educational standpoint to really tie up some loose ends with regard to producers as they make decisions from a management standpoint? And again, we're not going to talk much about verticillium wilt, but this will set the tenet with regard to the disease triangle. If we look at the environmental conditions over the last couple of years, it's been very challenging to get meaningful and useful information, reliable information where we're confident in the reliability of the response of cultivars because of those adverse conditions. If we look at this trial here, this was a field trial that was conducted in Crosby County, with a producer who was interested in changing some tillage practices in response to production in a field where verticillium was a problem. We have Delta Pine 1044 as a susceptible variety, and again the Fibromax 9170, as Terry mentioned, being the partially resistant. And if it don't rain, to quote John Baldwin, it don't matter, because in this case it's misleading in the fact that our susceptible variety actually out-yielded our partially resistant variety. And again, we have to keep that into consideration when we look at educational programs and talk about the importance of the disease triangle and not making hasty decisions based on a single data set or a few select data sets, looking at a comprehensive package altogether. It was encouraging that there were differences with regard to tillage. That may have been an artifact of just having trouble growing the crop in an arid condition where we're losing soil moisture due to additional tillage. Fusarium wilt, this is where we will shift gears. This is a West Texas perspective. It's my understanding, the survey work that we've done in the region, and I'm curious to see how it changes, or if it changes over the next several years or several months associated with the survey that was presented earlier, is predominantly race one. It's a very destructive disease. As you can see here in the picture, the foreground, we have a lot of death and mortality resulting from Fusarium wilt, large areas throughout the field. Tommy, this isn't just poor doing dirt. If we go into these areas, we can see that there are nematode problems associated with Fusarium that contributes to the complex. We're seeing that also manifest in the development of foliar symptoms. We can get that mortality, which does lead to large patches in the field like this where emergence is disrupted and yields are affected. We can use vascular discoloration to some degree to differentiate in educational efforts the difference between verticillium wilt and fusarium wilt. While there are subtle similarities, there are also subtle differences in the manifestation of the two diseases, and it's extremely important for producers to understand that, as a lot of the areas where we have verticillium wilt, we can also have be co-infested with fusarium. So we need to know what we're dealing with so we make the right recommendations. Oftentimes that requires isolation of the pathogen. Educational materials there, again, just putting things together to help increase awareness and maybe give some take-home bullet points for producers to use or consultants to use when differentiating between the two. This is some data that we actually shared at this conference in 2009, and what we're looking at here is disease incidence associated with cultivar response or varietal response in a field severely infested with FOV. And a similar color scheme to what Dr. Wheeler showed previously, the different bars simply represent, different colored bars represent different seed companies, and the specific names are labeled in the legend. If we look on the left-hand side of the graph, we can see considerably lower levels of disease in those lines or those varieties that are below the red line for sake of presentation. Those are not statistically different, but a huge range in disease incidence from some of those better doing lines, Tommy, than some of the worse or more severely affected, such as those toward the right. And again, what we're looking at here is the corresponding disease incidence for these varieties, and then that relationship is shown here, the same order with ranking them with regard to their yield from greatest to least. And we can see a strong correlation where we had less disease, we have higher yields. And one of the things we looked at consistently over several years is varietal performance. We want to make sure we're confident in making recommendations with regard to variety performance, and we like to see those consistent results. So the 5458 has done consistently well, performed very well within both new nematode trials as well as some of our fusarium wilt trials. And that's of great importance because if we're looking at making recommendations in a verticillium wilt field, say, that may be a variety we tend to lead people not to plant in fields that are predominantly verticillium wilt. Based on the performance of it in trials that we've seen on the high plains, it's typically not as strong as what we see associated with fusarium. A lot of data here. Again, this is just a repeatability, 2011, significant differences, that 4288, the 5458, contributing to the reduction in damage that results from the root knot nematode complex associated with fusarium. For sake of the presentation, we'll go through the next several slides quickly so we can get to nematodes, because that's where I think some of the most interesting information is. But again, this just shows consistent performance, a range in cultivar or varietal susceptibility. Large plots, both small plots. I feel that the large plots are of value. We have less opportunity to look at more genetic material or genotypes, but we do increase producer awareness when they see these large demonstrations that validate what we're seeing in the small plot work as well. 2012, again, similar situation here. Color scheme, yellow being phytogen, green being Delta Pine, the blue being Fibermax, hatch bars being experimental lines. We're continuing to evaluate products before they make their way into the marketplace, so we have a good idea for how those varieties fit. Nice range in yield potential in this location. 2012, as with 2011, wasn't exactly a great fusarium wilt environment because of the environmental conditions, but we still see differences that are significant and relatively understandable as it relates to some of our internal standards, with some promising releases coming from different programs, and again, affording more opportunities with regard to producers to choose varieties that may have a fit with their specific situations. One thing I will put here is like Delta Pine 174. If we relate these recommendations back to the first slide, you may look at Delta Pine 174 and say, from a disease package standpoint, that's the variety that best covers or best fits the situation with regard to disease management. But if you look at some of the genetic traits or the GMO traits, that's an RF variety. So if we're looking at the need or the lack of a need for B2 technology, that affords some opportunities that other varieties may or may not afford. So it's, again, all-encompassing information. What we have found, even the last year wasn't a great year for differentiating varietal performance with regard to the disease. We did see where we had some of our higher yields. We had our better stands. That was attributed greatly to the mortality that occurred because of infections. And again, that correlation between disease incidence and yield was there. Large plot trial in Gaines County. Again, this is just increasing kind of advertising opportunities so that producers can actually see these trends that we're seeing in small plot research at various field days. And again, that consistent performing across different counties across different environments. We spent a little bit of time talking about the fusarium aspect. We're focused a little bit on the root nematode. We have also reniform nematodes, so educational efforts are required with regard to differentiating between the two nematodes, but we'll focus mostly on root knot nematodes. Here we have a cover crop where we have cotton that has been established, and we see differences in performance throughout there. Very characteristic of the distribution of root knot nematodes within the field. If we have adequate soil moisture to properly sample plants, we can actually go out, dig up some of those symptomatic plants, see the characteristic symptoms associated with the nematodes, and if we need to further diagnose, we can actually stain the females and confirm that we have the nematode itself. I think a picture's worth 1,000 words. Dr. Allen, I have 30 minutes to talk, so I can probably spend a few on this one. Looking at varietal performance. This is coming out of some large plot research in Gaines County with Amanda Anderson, looking at the performance of a partially resistant variety compared to that of a susceptible. Growers like to see this. It helps them set their mind at ease when they're making decisions with regards to variety selection. So we're again trying to find those varieties that compare favorably and consistently to some of those partially resistant lines that are out there. Right now, we're looking at partially resistant available lines, such as the Stoneville 5458, the Stoneville 4288, I mentioned the Delta Pine 174. More recently, Phytogen 367, all with partial resistance, improved resistance to the root knot nematode. This is just some work done collectively there at the AgCares facility, where we're seeing the performance of partially resistant varieties compared to the susceptible check under varying levels of irrigation. And we can see benefits to that resistance under various environmental conditions. Again, a large plot trial there. This is row water, low irrigation capacity, similar trends where we're consistently seeing the performance of some of those partially resistant varieties. If we look at root knot nematode yield, this is a summary of some of Dr. Wheeler's work the last couple of years, looking at on-farm trials with producers in 2012, 2011, Brownfield, Lamesa, Seminole, Whiteface, where we're looking at the 367, the 5458, and or the 9160. And again, consistently seeing performance as it relates to yield. We can look at that relationship as it relates to reproduction. We have that resistance. The resistance is affecting the nematode's ability to reproduce, and we're seeing that yield increase can be attributed to the resistance associated with those partially resistant varieties. And again, we've talked a lot about a little. We've known most of the things we've discussed today, but we're looking at the validity of the data that comes out of subsequent studies. This is, again, that fusarium wilt trial that we had in Lubbock County, looking specifically at the root knot nematode populations. And what we can see here is nematode reproduction, again, trying to characterize a function of resistance, where we have the red being nematode eggs, the black being the second stage juveniles. We can see variability. Inherently, we have the ability to see differences associated with genotypes that may or may not possess resistance. Therefore, we're looking into repeatability, 1 year's worth of data. But the one thing that we did find that was very promising is FibroMax 2011 statistically performed with what we see associated with some of our partial resistance with regard to root knot nematode. So we're adding more options to our producers from a nematode standpoint, which is important due to the loss of Timic or Aldicarb that we've seen recently. So we're in the process of updating our recommendations and making this information more accessible to growers so they can look at the green light, red light, yellow light situation, much like we have just expired here. Green means stop, or green means go. Red means stop and think about what you're doing. And as of now, I'm 15 seconds over, so I'll conclude my talk and yield the floor to the next presenter.